Okay, so my name is Tamara Vukov, and I'm going to be speaking for the next little while with Bella Gallos, who's one of three Timorese living in Canada, and is a longtime Timorese activist and resistance fighter, and we're going to be talking a bit about that. So welcome, Bella.
Thank you.
You were born and raised in the time of the ongoing Indonesian military's genocide of your people since Indonesia's occupation of East Timor in 1975. You've witnessed and survived atrocities by the Indonesian military, including the Dili massacre of 1991. Part of your political work is to talk about your life and your work. And I was wondering if you'd talk a bit about what it means for you to tell this story over and over again as a means of resistance, and maybe share some of that story in the process.
Well, to repeat the story of my story, my own experience, living life under Indonesian occupation of my country, it's not easy. It's not something that easy to repeat every day, but something that keep me doing that, keep me, I don't feel like emotionally it's exhausted, but something that make me keep doing this because of I realize how lucky I am as the only Timorese woman in North America can speak like that. Meanwhile, thousands and thousands Timorese in the country cannot even say a word of A, but what happened to them. So I think that it's something that I should appreciate. And the freedom that I have right now in Canada is a freedom that my people are still fighting for 22 years. And though all of this is keeping me, I want to repeat the story. And when I repeat to people, I don't make people to look at me and say, pity, I don't want people to look pity on me, but I want people to see that how lucky we are in Canada to have all of the freedom that we have, that most of them, even many people, take it for granted. Meanwhile, other people bathe in blood, torture, kill, disappear for all we have right now that we don't fighting for. I think this whole thing that keeping me strong and doing this over and over again.
Right. And can you talk a little bit about, coming to Canada and the sort of things that you lived through before that and what that transition has been like working here?
Well, it is a big shock when I faced the first time being in Canada. And the worriness that I have, the pretending of the way I behave in my country, it's something that I should not doing that here because it's very different kind of life. It's really big shock. But because of I've been fighting for this, is for me that I just got something that I've been waiting for so long, and I was quickly adapt to the situation. It has taken a little time, but I found it so quickly. Like right now, I've been in Canada almost 3 years, and I've been travel around across Canada. I discovered Canada, and I never discovered East Timor. I don't know East Timor. That's an example, and I talk to people. Not to be worried that I'm going to got raped or got killed or put in a prison for no reason. I don't have that kind of feeling anymore. And have a demonstration, not to worry that those demonstrations will turn to a massacre. And talk to my friends about my opinion. I don't have to worry that they will hit me or they will, give information to the military to arrest me. I don't have that anymore. But, thinking of 3 years ago, that's what I've been living through. That's all that's other Timorese been living through every single day, pretending, doing things that we not want to do, be someone else that we not want to be. For example, we not just lost our members of our family, but we also lost our own identity as a Timorese.
Right, okay. And there's a strong history then of economic and military support of the Suharto regime in Indonesia by the West. Canada's Indonesia's major economic investor, and based on political and grassroots pressure on the Canadian government to curb trade and put an arms embargo on Indonesia. What is the situation like now? Have you seen any changes, or do you find that there's still a lot of Western support for Indonesia's genocidal repression of East Timor?
Well, sometimes it's hard to say that Indonesia alone can carry on this genocide. It's hard to say that they're able to do that. And the reason that I say that because I see that the suffering that's going on in East Timor, like the genocide that's going on in East Timor, is caused by Western military support. military, like diplomatically support, that they never said any word about it. That's any all the support that they have given to Indonesia. That gave a lot of power to Indonesian government to carry on the genocide in East Timor and to put pressure on their own people, kill a lot of innocent Indonesian people in the country. And I can see that Canada as well, as another country that also supply military equipment, diplomatically not speak about it. They have silence diplomacy, that they call that, by tight trade with human rights will help the Indonesian government to provide human rights abuses that are going on in the country. Take an example of East Timor. 22 years that have done nothing for East Timor. And Indonesia, since Suharto being a power, over 30 years, people are suffering under today. In the name of democracy, in the name of freedom. What else that we as a Timorese people have to show that we're suffering? And what else that Indonesian people should show that they're suffering under this regime until Western government stop that?
Right. And I mean, I know that there's been a lot of news lately. The most recent example of a Canadian trade has been BRIEX, which has gotten a lot of attention because it was such a kind of crazy story. But there's also companies like Inco and Bata that are major investors in Indonesia and supporting that regime. Do you find with the recent BRIEX controversy, I mean, we don't have to necessarily go into the whole thing, but that has received so much media attention, have you found that there's been any change? Has there been any talk about, you know, this sort of political repression and what this money is supporting?
There's an example that I tell you that money is important, that anything. And when it's become, like, when you're talking about money, there is, you know, completely people forget about basic, fundamental things that we should talk about. For example, BRIEX, I can describe as a big karma that ever happened to them. You know, like when you complain, when you have any kind of business with a country that carry on many, many innocent people's life, and beside that, you're not just hurting the people, but you're also hurting the environment in the country that completely destroy many, many people around that. And that's a big karma, and they deserve what happened right now.
Yeah. Okay, that's also touches on, I know that there's upcoming organizing around the Asia-Pacific Economic Exchange, which is APEC, which a lot of people are talking about as the new NAFTA. And Canada's, again, very pro-APEC, and KTN is calling this the year of the Asia-Pacific. And again, in Indonesia's a major trading partner there. There's a summit upcoming in Vancouver, and I guess President Suharto is going to be attending amongst other Asia-Pacific leaders. I know that people are interested in knowing about what kinds of organizing might be happening there, and are there ways that this issue can be raised in that context?
Well, I think that they will. I don't think that they will ever invite groups like us who are working so hard, tirelessly to, you know, to increase the awareness of East Timor issue, other issue, human rights issue in this country. I don't think that we're going to get invitation to involve in this APEC. But what we're going to do is we're going to have our meeting, our own meeting outside the building. Meanwhile, all of the corporation and those people who are, you know, talking about money will be go ahead with their plan inside the building. And we're going to make sure that those issues that they forgot to talk, we're going to talk it outside. So we also try to get a lot of attention as much as we could outside the building, just to make sure that this issue is not going to just pass, go just like that, because we needed to talk and we needed to discuss, because APEC is really hurting many, many people, many, many countries, East Timor as well. Mm-hmm. Take an example of last year, 1994, where 29 Timorese occupied American embassy. Well, when the meeting APEC was one in Indonesia,
okay,
and those people are suffering, and they just appeal to be there in that situation, just to ask that not to forget about human rights issue, not just talking about money, because the whole thing that they talk in there is not human rights. And if you're talking about human rights, you should talk. Let those people who never been speak, never people who have never have voice to speak, that to be there, and those people never being invited.
That's right. Yeah, and that's what I was sort of wanted to get into, is that kind of silencing of people. The Western media has been notoriously silent on the sort of situation in East Timor, and commentators like Noam Chomsky have argued that silence has been crucial to allowing the repression to continue.
Absolutely.
And have you seen much of a change in that situation, or do you still think there? I mean, I know there's a lot of work to do, but
there's a lot of work to do. But I see lately, for example, of Nobel Peace Prize. Mm-hmm. Nobel Peace Prize is a big thing for us inside East Timor and Timorese in exile. For us, it's wow, that's finally our struggle got recognition internationally. Mm-hmm. And the media is coming up with that. And a few days and then disappear again, as usual. So what we needed, and like I think that when they will cover the issue of East Timor where there is a massacre happen, there is hundreds of people die, or there is kind of things like that they will cover, you know. And for us, for example, I had a lot of experience. Well, I have a few, you know, activists around issue of my country. They would describe me as a person who are anti-Indonesia or something like that. To make it clear, of course I'm not anti-Indonesia. Indonesian people and Timorese people were all suffering, and our enemy was Indonesian government. Mm-hmm. We're not fighting the people.
Mm-hmm.
So this is kind of how media, you know, try to dismiss whole things. Try to dismiss all of the point of our struggle.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And speaking of the Nobel Peace Prize that Bishop Bello and resistance leader Jose Ramos Horta received last year, do you find that there's been any other political impact? Has that...
It is really big. A lot of impact around Nobel Peace Prize for East Timor. And right after this Nobel Peace Prize, I went to United States, my first trip in United States with Jose Ramos Horta, the Nobel Peace Prize winner. We went there and we traveled around, and it's so easy to bring up the issue of East Timor. People are start to like aware of the country called East Timor, and they started to find out more information about what's happened in East Timor. And especially in Canada, the country I live, it's so easier. Like people start to say, oh, we ever heard of it, because sometimes people heard, but just by the way, they didn't really put much attention in it. But when the Nobel Peace Prize was awarded to Bishop Bello and Zora Mazorta, make them think back, wow, we are heard about it, but not more, many people are interested. And the group and the support that I've got for this year for East Timor is incredible, amazing. And they're all Canadian.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really encouraging. So maybe we can talk a bit more then about the state of the resistance movement in East Timor at the time, the National Council of Mobile Resistance. What sort of things you're fighting for, what the situation is right now. I know there's an upcoming Indonesian election, and what kinds of things are being, what kinds of things are going on.
Well, I think in Indonesia itself, the people are, like I say, they also like fighting for years and years for democracy, for Indonesia. And meanwhile, many all of those pro-activists, like pro-democracy activists, they're also side-by-side working with East Timorese resistance. They also like sympathize with our struggle, where they pick our struggle as a motivation for their own struggle inside the country. And we can see that the whole situation in Indonesia, they also have really care for, because of the people are waking up right now. People are aware of Suharto's regime. But, of course, because of the Western government support, it's impossible for people to able to get what they wanted. But for East Timorese itself, we believe that self-determination for East Timor will bring about democracy for Indonesia. And the same things with Indonesia, where there is a democracy for Indonesia will bring about self-determination for East Timorese people, because that's what we're fighting for. And self-determination that East Timorese people fighting for, and this is the basic right that people should have, a small or a big country, yellow or whatever color they are, they have the rights to have that, and East Timorese people should have the rights to have a choice, and that's what we're asking people to support. And like you say, CNRM, National Council of Mobile Resistance, the national umbrella of Timorese resistance internationally, in international level, asking through this organization, we ask for three peace plans that we've been put out, you know, ask all to withdraw all of the heavy military from the territory, and to have a referendum for East Timor by under United Nations supervisor, so that there will be no no much conflicts going on in the country, and also the reduction of Indonesian immigrants out of the country, because there is, especially the capital of East Timor, is more Indonesian people than East Timorese people.
Right. Yeah. That's a standard tactic, you know, of in a genocidal kind of situation.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe I was also wondering about specifically different sort of sectors' roles in the resistance struggle. Maybe if you talk a bit about the church's role, I mean, given that Bishop Bella was one of the people who...
Yeah, like in East Timor, not like Canada, where, you know, you have thousand organizations for your rights. You know, everybody have their rights here, and then everybody have access to organizations that they like to involve. But in East Timor, there is no single organization that ever allowed to be in that country. So church have played a strong role in the country because, you know, again, the church is, East Timorese people are 90% of the population are Catholic, and all of the priests and nuns and bishops are Timorese. They're also the same people who lost all of members of their family, and they're being same kind of... So the Catholic church in East Timor have played a lot of role because they stand for the people's right there. They're the only place that people of East Timor can come and ask for help. So when I see that Bishop Bell is the only human being in the country, whole population can speak against Indonesian government, speak it publicly, because of he only person who heard so much, who witnessed a lot, because everybody come there. And I have this experience when in 1991, the Dilim massacre happened, and I was one of the survivors of the Dilim massacre. Me and my mother, we went to Bishop Bello and asked for help, that who could find my brother, my oldest brother at the time, and he was disappeared after the massacre. They took him away. And at the time, I saw 100 Timorese mother were there waiting for Bishop Bello that he could help them. Mm-hmm. And as a young person who see those mothers, and I realized that I was not the only person who witnessed my mother crying or been through all of the suffering since 1975, lost two of her sons and her sister. There is thousands of daughters and sons watch their parents been through this. And this is kind of see how Bishop Bellas play a strong role to help those mothers.
Right.
To get their son, their husband, their daughters back to their hand, safe, even though completely terribly, like my brother lost all of his 10 of his fingernails, his face is cut off, but he's still alive.
Mm-hmm.
We have them back.
Right. Yeah. And that brings me sort of to what I wanted to ask a bit more about women's role in the resistance struggle. I know that women have been, you know, subjected to rape by Indonesian military, mm-hmm. have been subjected to forced sterilization, all kinds of things like that, you know, specifically targeted against them.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering a bit more about women's role within the resistance struggle. You've sort of touched on it a little bit there.
Yeah, women's role in the struggle is, you can see that almost women, people who are facing the military almost 24 hours a day, were mostly those women who were their husband in struggle, their husband in the jungle fighting, carry on the struggle in the jungle, their husband underground movement, especially those women who are having son or daughter that involved with the struggle, those women who are the most suffering women in this country. And I remember a story from older women from my family, with many women been flying across the country with helicopter, threatened, like forced by the military to call their husband or their son or daughter to surrender the struggle, or they will drop them out of the helicopters. And many women like me is also subjected to sterilization with no explanation. Those kind of things that we face, but there is not going to cut down our desire to free our country.
Mm-hmm.
The more they do that, the more it build up the anger and build up the big, like, I never surrender the struggle until my country's free. That's my dream. And there's other people, same things. And this is those women who are, many women who still been through a lot of trauma of rape that going on because of their husband in the struggle. Many women that being witness their son and their daughter rape or torture in the front of them, like my mother, one of those.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of how strong they are facing that, but they never discourage us not to involve with the resistance. They
right.
even, you know, encourage us, go and do it. Like, take me an example that I'm the only daughter in my family, but she would never say that, not to defect it or something like that. Even she support me to do that because she know that hard to not to see me, but I'm alive and I have that, my rights back.
Right. Yeah. So bringing that, you know, then that anger and that struggle into Canadian context, the sort of, maybe you could talk a bit about the solidarity organizing that's mm-hmm. happening in Canada. I know it's focused on getting Canada to end diplomatic, military, and economic mm-hmm. support of the Indonesian regime, and what sorts of things are going on there, and what else could Canada be doing?
Yeah, because since I got, you know, got to Canada, and I've been working with side by side with all of Canadian who cares about this issue, and we've been found a lot of groups across this country, and we also linked our issue to other groups, other organizations like women's movement in Canada, trade union across Canada, and other human rights non-government groups in Canada. Those groups that like make East Timor ETENS really strong because of government not look at us as a small group, a small people who are want to try to change the world, mm-hmm. but there is other a link of other organizations around us that support our work and are willing to do as much as they could to help us. So, and then what the Canadian could do as an individual, they can write to the government to remind the government, to let the government know that I know about the issue and why don't you take a step in this issue, and why not you support United Nations resolution on East Timor? Why did you always against it or abstain that? Why did you do that? Get the answer from them. And why did you supply military equipment to the country that put pressure on their own people and occupy their neighbor? And that should be from Canadian to concern about it, because their government, like directly or indirectly, they're already involved anyway.
Yeah. So. And they're doing it in Canadians'
name. In Canadians' name.
Yeah. Yeah. And you mentioned then ETAN, the East Timor Alert Network, that's grown quite a bit, mm-hmm. you said specifically since the Nobel Peace Prize, and it's active in several cities.
It is.
Okay. Finally, just to sort of getting towards the wrap-up then, I know that your family in East Timor was exposed to threats and intimidation tactics by the Indonesian ambassador to Canada last year, based on your political work and speech in here in Canada. I don't mm-hmm. know if you could talk a bit about that and if there have been any new developments in that situation.
Well, there is not much. Like, I myself, even though I'm in Canada, still being harassed so many times where Indonesian agents from embassy always follow me around. And well, I got used to it because they're not going to hurt me openly like they could do it in East Timor. So, but it is still going on in the intense between me and an embassy. Of course, they don't like what I do, but well, I'm not going to stop it just because they don't like me. And my family have to face that. As long as, like I say, as long as I doing this work in Canada, will put my family in a big, they have to face the negative consequence, like Ambassador said. Ambassador kept saying that as long as Isabel Gallos speak in Canada about East Timor, her parents will take the negative consequence. So if something has happened about this, well, they will have to answer that question. And but I believe that as much as I could speak loud in this country, my family will get the safer my family got. And like other family, it's not just my family. As long as the military occupy the country, there is no family that will feel safe or feel freedom or things like that in that country. So we all have the same kind of problem. And my family and others would like to take the sacrifice as long as other country, Western government, is still blind eye and support the military equipment to Indonesia. So this is all sacrifice Timorese have to pay price to it.
Okay, thank you. So as a final question then, if it's true then that international silence has been crucial to the ongoing repression in East Timor, what kind of impact do you see in your work trying to break that silence?
Well, I think the silence is already broken down by Timorese through hundreds and hundreds of massacres and massacre that people know in 1991. And I myself forced myself to be a refugee that I never experienced before. It wasn't easy. You know, I saw a lot of refugees in my own country, but I didn't know what it's like to be like them. And now I've experienced it in the first hand, and it wasn't easy. And through all of this, I'm not going to put my action through my anger, but I'm going to make my action through a good things, through peace and things that I could do for my country. And I also believe that our struggle is your struggle, because we all in the same planet. Like, this is the thing that we're supposed to working hand by hand between, you know, whoever in this planet, we should working together, and we should not be isolated from one another. And that's what I'm trying to do by link East Timor, and then, you know, bring the freedom that we all have in this country, share with other people, like East Timorese people. And that's, to make it happen, we need to work together. And this is our responsibility to make it happen, not just one people. One people can make small things, but we all, each of us, make small things, and we all put together big things.
Yeah, we need to link our struggles.
Yes.
Okay, so then thank you very much,
Bella
Gallus, for talking to us today. This is Tamara Vukov. Just to wrap up, for listeners who are interested in learning more about these issues, getting involved, you can contact the East Timor Alert Network. Thank you very much again, Bella.
You're welcome.